was absolutely convinced it was.
And President Trump did not dissuade you of that in the conversation that you acknowledge you had with him.
I don't.
You are listening to WGXC ACRA, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wavefarm.
This is a special program scheduling announcement. Local WGXC programming will be interrupted on 90.7 FM on Tuesday, November 19th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The House Intelligence Committee will be holding an impeachment hearing with Jennifer Williams, an aide to Vice President Mike Pence, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, a National Security Council aide, Kurt Volker, the former U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine, and Tim Morrison, a National Security Council aide, testifying. Local WGXC programming will still be available at wavefarm.org/listen on the All Together Now channel.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m.
Trump, it's got to be Zelensky. It can't be the prosecutor. But that's what I relayed. Whoever I got that information from, I relayed that to, I believe, both Ambassador Taylor and to Mr. Morrison.
But as of September 9th, you understood, did you not, that President Trump, either himself or through his agents, required that President Zelensky make a public announcement of the two investigations that President Trump cared about in order to get both the White House meeting and to release the security assistance. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
That concludes our 45 minutes. I now recognize
Pacifica Radio's live gavel-to-gavel coverage of the House Intelligence Committee's impeachment inquiry. This morning we are hearing from U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, who has provided explosive testimony so far, saying that it was the expressed direction from the President of the United States, Donald Trump, to work with the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, in a pressure campaign to force Ukraine to investigate a potential political rival.
Recess.
Sondland also testified that many throughout the administration were in on it, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, the National Security Council, and others. Again, this is Pacifica Radio's live coverage. I'm Mitch Jezerich with Kat Brooks. The committee is now in a recess, so we will provide some analysis. Kat Brooks, a profound morning so far.
Ambassador Gordon Sondland's opening statement was fire. It was the longest, I believe, opening statement we've had since these public hearings began, and he walked through the entire timeline of what happened and who knew, and apparently everybody, as he said, was in the loop, including Mick Mulvaney, who to date, you know, well, walked back his media interview where he said, you know, this is how politics goes, get over it. Donald Trump knew. Finally hearing more about Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump's personal attorney, which I've sort of been looking for in these hearings, and how he was the guy that was ordering, you know, the president's mouthpiece, really, to direct these things happening. Now, Mitch, as we've been talking, you've continued to say, I'm waiting for this John Dean moment, the John Dean moment from Watergate, where he said, yes, the president directed me to do these things. Is this that moment? Is this the moment where we finally have complicit enough testimony that says, yep, president knew, president told me to do it, president was, quote, in the loop, end quote. You're cringing.
I think today's testimony is incredibly damning. And it'll be very interesting to see how Republicans are going to respond to Sondland. When they come back from break, Devin Nunes will have the questioning period for 45 minutes along with Steve Castor.
Can I just say something right quick before you? What also to me was comical, and I'll be very interesting to watch and listeners pay attention to this, was that Devin Nunes, the ranking Republican member, in his opening remarks today, he told Gordon Sondland, you're here to be smeared, almost apologized to him and thanked him for his service. I wish we could have seen Devin Nunes' face as Ambassador Sondland was testifying, and I'll be very interested to see if he's
Nunes
as nice
right.
to
he's
him
probably
when we come back.
About to be smeared by
but,
him himself.
By the Republicans now, not the Democrats.
So just quickly, though, I don't know if it's the John Dean moment. Maybe mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be. It could be its own moment in its own time. But what we did get out of this is him saying that it was the president's express direction to work with Giuliani, that the president never told him it was the quid pro quo, never mentioned the military aid. That's the opening that's still there that I think Republicans will be going into that opening when they come back. Again, this is Pacifica Radio's live coverage, gavel-to-gavel coverage of the House Intelligence Committee's impeachment inquiry. The committee right now is in break. We will have more for you from this committee once it resumes, and we'll also have analysis. But first, we're going to get the latest on what's going on all over the world with these headlines with Eileen Alfandary.
European Union Ambassador Gordon Sondland today implicated Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, as well as President Trump, and the underlying issues at the heart of the Trump impeachment inquiry.
I know that members of this committee frequently frame these complicated issues in the form of a simple question. Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes. Mr. Giuliani conveyed to Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, and others that President Trump wanted a public statement from President Zelensky committing to investigations of Burisma and the 2016 election. Mr. Giuliani expressed those requests directly to the Ukrainians. And Mr. Giuliani also expressed those requests directly to us. We all understood that these prerequisites for the White House call and the right White House meeting reflected President Trump's desires and requirements.
Sondland said he and others did not want to work through Trump's private attorney, Rudy Giuliani, but that Trump directed them to do so. His opening statement included several key details. Sondland confirmed he spoke with Trump on a cell phone from a busy Kyiv restaurant the day after the president pressured Ukraine's leader to launch the investigations. He also said he kept Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and other top administration officials aware of his dealings with Ukraine on the investigations Trump sought. Sondland said he specifically told Vice President Mike Pence he had concerns that U.S. military aid to Ukraine had become tied to the investigations. The Israeli military said it struck dozens of what it said were Iranian targets in Syria. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said the airstrikes killed 5 Syrian troops, 16 Iranian and Iran-backed fighters, and 2 Syrian civilians. The Israeli military said its fighter jets hit multiple targets belonging to Iran's elite Quds Force, including surface-to-air missiles, weapons warehouses, and military bases. The strikes were the most intense launched by Israel since last January. Israel said its airstrikes were a response to 4 rockets fired from Syria toward Israel yesterday. Iran had no immediate comment, but Russia condemned Israel's military strikes, saying they're a violation of international law. As Atlanta prepares to host tonight's Democratic presidential debate, the Democrat who narrowly lost last year's Georgia's governor's race is warning about voter suppression. At a panel discussion, Stacey Abrams spoke out against restrictive voter ID laws that can exclude many people with disabilities.
And in states that are passing restrictive voter ID laws, there's this notion that it's racially neutral and facially neutral. But we know that's not true. Well, the reality is for the disabled community, often those things aren't normal. And the access is limited. And if you have to have a certain form of ID that is so narrow in scope that it excludes the very people who need the right to vote, then voter IDs are wrong in the way they're doing it these days.
Democrats have said Abrams lost the close 2018 Georgia gubernatorial election because of voter suppression. Minnesota Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is asking a federal judge to show compassion in sentencing a New York man who threatened to kill her. Omar wrote in a letter that a lengthy sentence for Patrick Carlineo Jr. would likely only increase his anger and resentment. She says he should instead be given a chance to make amends and seek redemption. The 55-year-old man pleaded guilty in federal court in New York on Monday to calling Omar's office, telling a staffer that she was a terrorist and threatening to shoot her, more specifically to put a bullet in her expletive skull. Omar's letter said, "The answer to hate is not more hate, it is compassion. Who are we as a nation if we respond to threats of political retribution with retribution ourselves," Omar wrote. The U.S. Senate easily approved a bipartisan bill to support human rights in Hong Kong on a voice vote. Senate Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
"We in the United States stand in solidarity with the Democratic protesters who have every right to assemble and petition their government for their rights as citizens of Hong Kong."
The measure mandates sanctions on Chinese and Hong Kong officials who carry out human rights abuses. It requires an annual review of the favorable trade status the U.S. grants Hong Kong. The Hong Kong government released a statement saying the provisions are unnecessary and unwarranted. China threatened to take strong countermeasures if Congress proceeds with final passage of the bill. I'm Eileen Alfandary for Pacifica Radio.
You are listening to Pacifica's live broadcast of the House Intelligence Committee's impeachment hearings, which opened with explosive testimony this morning from Ambassador Gordon D. Sondland, the United States Ambassador to the European Union. I'm Kat Brooks here with Mitch Jezerich.
And Kat, again, I'm just sort of getting over that opening statement. I have covered, as you know, and you've covered your own number of congressional hearings. And that I'm trying to remember if I can remember such an impactful opening statement as we just heard. You know, I think there are a lot of questions coming into this. How is Gordon Sondland going to come off? Is he going to take the Fifth Amendment so not to incriminate himself? Is he going to out everyone in his role in this pressure campaign on Ukraine to get Ukraine to do these investigations? Is he going to be someone more like Tim Morrison yesterday, who acknowledged all these things happen, but you know, we're really making much bigger of a deal out of it than it actually is? But I think this is not good for the president whatsoever. And what I also find interesting, Kat, is in his testimony, in which he was talking about his inability to get to his own records, his own notes from the State Department and the White House. And this is further evidence of the White House not participating at and not cooperating
obstructing
at all with this impeachment inquiry in the House of Representatives. In his opening statement, Adam Schiff talked about how the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon included Article 3, which was very much about the White House not cooperating with the impeachment. And here's the thing. I think the White House's response to this impeachment inquiry could be grounds for impeachment by itself, regardless of everything that is happening. And here's why. In the United States Constitution concerning impeachment, it is very explicit. The House of Representatives shall have the sole power to conduct impeachment. That means not only does it have the sole power, but it has this massive responsibility on its shoulders to determine when it should impeach and when it should not. And when we think about the Nixon tapes, when that case had to go to the Supreme Court, the part of the reasoning of Congress eventually getting the Nixon tapes was that the justices were saying Congress, again, has this awesome responsibility to determine. It's the only check against the president, the ultimate check against the president in the Constitution. Right. And so Congress has this awesome responsibility to determine whether or not it should impeach. The only way it can come to that determination is to be provided the information it needs to determine if impeachment should occur. So the White House and its lack of cooperation in this, including not allowing someone like Gordon Sondland to be able to look at his own records. He can give testimony that may be more accurate, I think this is very significant. And you could impeach Donald Trump just on the White House's absolute lack of cooperation in this impeachment inquiry alone. It doesn't matter if they think it is an illegitimate process or not. The Constitution says it. It doesn't matter what the White House thinks at all. It doesn't matter what he says either, because he can't express the majority of the House, and that's how you express the will of the House, is through the majority, because they're in the minority. But they have voted on, at the very minute, they have now voted on these impeachment proceeding procedures, right? And so that it is the sole purview of the House to conduct this. It's clear in the Constitution. The White House is impeding that. That's impeachable.
I think there were two sort of fatal mistakes that the White House made. Because remember, Gordon Sondland did not start as this open of a witness, and in fact had to come back and revise his testimony twice after other people testified. I think the combination of him not being able to access his documents and his records, him taking up deep offense to that, and B, Donald Trump disavowing any close relationship with him. I think those two things probably played a factor in his willingness to be open. He was like, you know, do you know me now? Right? All of you know me, and all of you were in the loop. And I think, too, the other thing that I picked up is that he felt like it was an affront to his character for his activities as ambassador to be characterized as rogue and going off the grid and not following, you know, what the White House said, and that he wasn't in line or in order. And so I think those three things, I think, played a big role into why he gave such a comprehensive and detailed statement naming names.
I mean, there was a lot of hype over today's testimony, and this is one of the few times that the reality has actually lived up to the hype, I would say, so far that we got out of this testimony. We do have more questioning to come, however, and then even later in the day we'll have a second panel, so a full day of testimony in the House Intelligence Committee impeachment hearing. This is live coverage, gavel-to-gavel coverage from Pacifica Radio with Kat Brooks. I'm Mitch Jezerich. We're going to take a quick musical break so that radio stations can re-identify themselves. When we come back, we'll have further analysis with guests. So stay tuned.
Are listening to Pacifica's live coverage of the House Intelligence Committee's impeachment hearings, where this morning we heard explosive testimony from Ambassador Gordon Sondland, who was the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, naming names, saying everyone was in the loop. He was not acting rogue. He was acting on direction from the president via the president's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, though he did have direct contact with the president, which he mentioned several times, and several phone calls. We are joined this morning by Hadara Avram, a professor of law at the University of California, Hastings College of Law, where she co-directs the Hastings Institute for Criminal Justice. Good morning, Hadar.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us again. Your reaction to the opening statement of Ambassador Sondland this morning at the impeachment hearings?
Well, both the opening statement and the investigation, my reaction, this is it. This is the smoking gun that we were waiting for. So Sondland completely backpedals his apparent denials of quid pro quo and basically crawls over to the right side of history, emphasizes that they cooperated with Giuliani not because they wanted to, but because they were ordered by Trump. As you said, brings everybody, Pence, Pompeo, everybody into the loop. And most importantly, not only does he tie the requirements for Ukraine to aid, but he says what the Ukrainians needed to deliver to Trump was not an actual investigation. They only had to announce one on CNN. And what that tells you is that Trump and everybody else knows that the Biden thing is nonsense, that there's nothing there, that the 2016 thing is a complete ridiculous conspiracy theory. But what they want is a clip from CNN showing a foreign leader committing to investigating the Bidens. Recall that what ended up hurting Hillary Clinton in the polls in 2016 was just an announcement that there was an investigation into her emails. It didn't really matter if there was anything there. And you can see the exact same tactic at work here, which should basically dissuade anybody from having any doubts that anything here was legitimate U.S. foreign policy rather than advancing Trump's personal campaign.
What holes in his testimony do you think the Republicans will attempt to exploit when we go back to the hearing and they have their opportunity? Devin Nunes in particular has his opportunity to interrogate Gordon Sondland.
Well, I think they're going to have a pretty hard time. I don't know how many of you saw Nunes's face toward the end of the hearing. He does not seem happy.
Hadar Avram, we're going to have to really apologize to you. The hearing is now back in session, and we will come back to you later. We hope you'll join us again.
Yes.
This is live radio. Hadar Avram, professor of law at the University of California, Hastings College of Law. We now go to Republican Representative Devin Nunes of California.
The Democrats have been unwilling to accept is that their operatives got campaign dirt from Ukrainians in the 2016 election. Now, they know it. They know it's true because we have financial records that show it. So the Democrats were heavily involved working with Ukrainians to dirty up the Trump campaign in 2016. So, Ambassador, I want to go through just a few of the incidents that we know. I know you may not know all about them. You may know about them now. But I want to walk through some of those examples of why the president may be very upset with Ukraine and think that they're a country that's out to get him, as I think both you've said that and Ambassador Volker have said that from that May 23rd meeting. The first question I have is, were you aware of the anti-Trump efforts by DNC operative Alexandra Chalupa?
I'm not aware of it.
So in 2000, there was a 2017 article that also quotes a Ukrainian parliamentarian, Artemenko, saying, quote, it was clear that they were supporting, meaning Ukraine, supporting Hillary Clinton's candidacy, and they did everything from organizing meetings with the Clinton team to publicly supporting her to criticizing Trump. I think that they simply didn't meet with the Trump campaign because they thought Hillary would win. Do you know that Ukrainian official by any chance that stated that? Were you aware that then-Ukrainian ambassador to the U.S., Chalet, wrote an op-ed in The Hill during the 2016 presidential campaign criticizing then-candidate Trump?
Not aware.
But you know that now after in the last few months?
Correct.
So probably one of the more disturbing ones is the Ukraine Internal Affairs Minister, Avakov, mocked and disparaged then-candidate Trump on Facebook and Twitter. Were you aware that Serhiy Lyshenko, a Ukrainian parliamentarian, of who were the sources in the Steele dossier that the Democrats had paid for. The House Republicans wanted to know that all through the spring and even the summer of, and even as of today, we'd still like to know. That's why we've subpoenaed the DNC operatives that they refused to subpoena. We sent a letter this morning. I doubt we'll see those subpoenas. We want to know exactly, get to the bottom of exactly, who were these Democratic operatives that were dirtying up the Trump campaign in 2016? And they just can't get over that the president would send his personal attorney over there to try to get to the bottom of that. And Ambassador, you had very few dealings with Rudy Giuliani, a few text messages?
A few text messages and a few phone calls.
Right. So the whistleblower, trying to put together here with their timeline, they seem to have a timeline problem, because the whistleblower that only they know, who they won't subpoena, who clearly Mr. Vindman knows, who they blocked testimony yesterday from and would not allow Mr. Vindman to answer our questions, that whistleblower says on July 25th that there were all these promises being made. Yet the, I forget what they call it, the drug deal that the three amigos were cooking up seems to be their latest. You're part of the three amigos in the drug deal, Ambassador. Were you aware of any drug deal on July 25th when the phone call actually occurred?
I don't know about any drug deal.
Right. And did you know you were part of the three amigos?
I am. I'm a proud part of the three amigos.
And that's the same thing Ambassador Volker said yesterday. Because by the time the phone call that supposedly the whistleblower claims was the reason, was the original quid pro quo, has now got down to, we're now a month later where you're involved, and their quid pro quo has gotten down to, it's down to the low level of, well, they want a statement. And you didn't even know about anything to do with, on July 25th, you knew nothing about military aid being withheld.
I knew military aid was withheld beginning, I believe, on July 18th when Ambassador Taylor told both of us that that was the case.
But on July, but you don't know about, you were not on the July 25th call.
I was not.
Where the aid doesn't come up at all.
Again, I just read the readout when everyone else did.
Well, we've had everybody's testify that was on the July 25th call, that there was no aid discussed on the July 25th call. So then you're in the process. You have no idea that this is tied to Burisma or anybody else. You say you don't realize that until the end of August.
I didn't realize that aid was tied. The Burisma in 2016 piece was much earlier, Ranking Member.
I'm glad you bring up Burisma, because this is another issue that the Democrats don't want to go into. They refuse to call in Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden could get to the bottom of all of this. He could come in and talk about whether or not it was appropriate for him to receive over $50,000 a month while his dad was vice president. And when they actually were able to stop and get an investigator fired, they could call on Hunter Biden, but they don't want to do it. But let's talk about Burisma, Ambassador. Now, I know you're the ambassador of the EU, and I think some of the members later will get into whether or not it was appropriate for you to be in Ukraine or not. I believe it was. I think you have a clear mandate to do it. But you wouldn't be the first ambassador to actually be interested in Burisma. Did you know that in September 2015, then ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt, publicly called for an investigation into Slavisky, the president of Burisma? This was the Ukrainian ambassador appointed by President Obama in Ukraine.
I wasn't aware of that, no.
You were not aware of it?
No.
So you would not be the first one to be mentioning that investigations should be done on Burisma because it happened during the Obama administration. Did you know that financial records show Burisma routed more than $3 million to the American accounts tied to Hunter Biden?
I did not know that.
Did you know that Burisma's American lawyers tried to secure a meeting with the new state prosecutor the same day as predecessor Viktor Shokin, who the vice president wanted fired, was announced?
Did not know that.
Well, we're not going to get to the answer to many of these questions because the witnesses that need to come in and clarify exactly what the Democrats were doing in 2016, we're not going to be able to visit with those witnesses. And so it's an inconvenient truth that the Democrats don't want to admit. Their operatives that were dirtying up the Trump campaign using Ukrainian sources in 2016, and they do not want us to get to the bottom of it. They don't want you, Ambassador, to get to the bottom of it. They don't want the president's personal attorney, even though he's under a special counsel investigation that they fed into the FBI that we've dealt with for over 3 years. They don't want to get to the bottom of that, Ambassador. I think Mr. Castro has some questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Nunes. Good morning,
floundering
Ambassador. How are
Devin
you?
Nunes morning, hands Castro. It over to staff Republican
back. You're here
Steve
all day
Castro.
On the 17th, late into the night, so thank you for your cooperation with the investigation. Did the president ever tell you personally about any preconditions for anything?
No.
Okay, so the president never told you about any preconditions for the aid to be released?
No.
The president never told you about any preconditions for a White House meeting?
Personally, no.
You said you didn't have your records or your documents from the State Department, but if you did, there wouldn't be any document or record that ties President Trump personally to any of this. Your documents or records?
I don't recall anything like
okay.
that.
Okay. No. Good heavens. Okay. You testified Mr. Giuliani's requests for a quid pro quo for the White House meeting. And you indicated that you believe that was he was evincing President Trump's interests, correct?
My contact with Mr. Giuliani began, as I said, very late in the process, after August 1st, when I was first introduced to him by a text from Ambassador Volker. So we had already begun those discussions, I believe, with the Ukrainians prior to August 1st, so everything was being funneled through others, including Mr. Volker.
Okay. But you testified that Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the president, correct?
That's our understanding, okay. Yes.
But how did you know that? Who told you?
Well, when the president says, talk to my personal attorney, and then Mr. Giuliani, as his personal attorney, makes certain requests or demands, we assume it's coming from the president. I'm not testifying that I heard the president tell Mr. Giuliani to tell us, so if that's your question.
Right, but at your deposition, you said the question was at the May 23rd meeting when the president said, go talk to Rudy. You responded, he didn't even say go talk. He said, talk to Rudy. You subsequently said it was sort of like, I don't want to talk about this. So it wasn't an order or a direction to go talk with Mr. Giuliani, correct?
Our conclusion and the conclusion of the three of us was that if we did not talk to Rudy, nothing would move forward on Ukraine.
Okay. And then that was May 23rd, and then you never had any personal communications with Giuliani until August, right?
That's correct.
And Volker was handling? Ambassador Volker was? Was he
Volker,
the primary?
Volker, Perry, and others.
Okay. Ambassador Volker, you testified he's a professional diplomat, correct?
Yes, he is.
And you said you had a great relationship with him?
I do, yes.
You said he was a very smart guy?
Yes.
Ambassador Ivanovich said he's a brilliant diplomat, in fact. You agree with that?
He's pretty smart.
You stated that he's one of those people I'd hand my wallet to?
I would.
And so did you hear his testimony yesterday?
I did not.
Okay, because
I was busy getting ready for you.
He didn't have any evidence of any of these preconditions. And he was the one most engaged with the Ukrainians, wasn't he?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, you testified, and, you know, this was his full-time job, although he was doing it for free.
He was the special envoy.
And you testified you came in and out of the events, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. At your deposition, we asked you about your communications with the president, and we asked you whether there were so many that it would be impossible to chronicle. And you said, no, it wasn't that many, and we went down the path of building a list of communications you remember with the president, right?
Correct.
We talked about May 23rd in the Oval Office.
Yes.
You mentioned on July 25th before you went to Ukraine, you called the president, but there was no material information on the 25th call, correct?
Not that I recall.
Okay. Then the last Friday, Mr. Holmes came in, and I guess his testimony refreshed your recollection?
Yeah, what refreshed my recollection was when he mentioned ASAP Rocky, then all of a sudden okay. It came back to me. Yeah.
And talking about the Mr. President Zelensky loving the president and so forth?
Well, the whole thing sort of came back to me after he mentioned ASAP Rocky.
And then the next time, you know, we tried to unpack this, the next time you talked with the president was on the telephone, was September 9th, according to your deposition, right?
I may have even spoken to him on September 6th, but again, okay. I just don't have all the records. I wish I could get them. Then I could answer your questions very easily.
Okay. But on September 9th, at least at your deposition, you were extremely clear. You called the president. You said he was feeling cranky that day, right?
He seemed very cranky to me.
And you said in no uncertain terms, and this is on the heels of the Bill Taylor text, right?
Right.
And why don't you tell us, what did the president say to you on September 9th that you remember?
Well, words to the effect, I decided to ask the president the question in an open-ended fashion because there were so many different scenarios floating around as to what was going on with Ukraine. So rather than ask the president 9 different questions, is it this, is it this, is it that, I just said, what do you want from Ukraine? I may have even used a 4-letter word. And he said, I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. I just want Zelensky to do the right thing, to do what he ran on, or words to that effect. And that gave me the impetus to respond to Ambassador Taylor with the text that I sent. As I said to Mr. Goldman, it was not an artfully written text. I should have been more specific, put it in quotes, something like that. But basically, I wanted Ambassador Taylor, to pick up the ball and take it from there. I had gone as far as I could go.
And you believe the president, correct?
You know what? I'm not going to characterize whether I believed or didn't believe. I was just trying to convey what he said on the phone.
Okay. And at that point in time, the pause in the aid was paused for 55 days. There was a news article in Politico on August 28th talking about it. So by that point in time, the president had been receiving calls from senators. He had been getting pressure to lift the aid, correct?
That's what I understand, yes.
I want to turn back to your opener on page 5. When you talk about, in the absence of any credible explanation for the suspension of aid, I later came to believe that the resumption of security aid would not occur until there was a public statement from Ukraine committing to the investigations, correct?
Correct.
And you acknowledge that this is speculation, right?
It was a presumption.
Okay. That you it was a guess. In fact, I think you even said this morning.
Well, I want to say that it goes back to Mr. Goldman's point or Chairman Schiff's 2 + 2 = 4 in my mind at that point.
Okay, but you didn't have any evidence of that, correct?
Other than the aid wasn't being released and we weren't getting anywhere with the Ukrainians.
Okay, but did Ambassador Volker clue you in that was the issue? I mean, this is a pretty high, this is a pretty serious conclusion you've reached without precise evidence.
Well, I sent that email to Secretary Pompeo to set up a potential meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky in Warsaw. And when I referred to the logjam, I referred to the logjam in a very inclusive way. Everything was jammed up at that point. And Secretary Pompeo essentially gave me the green light to brief President Zelensky about making those announcements.
Okay, we can turn to that. And then that was your email dated what date?
Do you have the page there?
Well, your email to Secretary Pompeo. Was that August 11th?
August 22nd.
Okay, so you're asking Secretary Pompeo whether we should block time. And I mean, is there any discussion of specific investigations? Is there any discussion of Biden or Burisma or anything linking to aid in this email that you sent to Pompeo?
This was a proposed briefing that I was going to give President Zelensky. And I was going to call President Zelensky and ask him to say what is in this email. And I was asking essentially President Pompeo's permission to do that,
right,
which he said yes.
But at that point in time, we're talking about investigations into the origins of the 2016 election. We're not talking about anything to do with Joe Biden.
Joe Biden did not come up.
Okay. Stepping back a page to your email to the State Department on August 11th, you email Secretary Pompeo and you say, Kurt and I negotiated a statement from Zelensky to be delivered for our review in a day or two. And the question I have here is that, I mean, that statement never was issued. And in fact, Ambassador Volker has testified that he didn't think it was a good idea, and ultimately the Ukrainians didn't think it was a good idea. And so the statement never reached a finalized state.
That's correct.
But even if it had, it doesn't talk about Biden's or Burisma or anything insidious, correct?
Well, the statement, as I recall, would have mentioned the 2016 election/DNC server and Burisma.
Okay.
It would not have mentioned the Bidens.
And have you heard Ambassador Volker, how he talks about what might be an investigation into Burisma?
No.
Okay. I mean, he has said that if there were Ukrainians engaged in violations of Ukrainian law, then the prosecutor general with the new administration ought to investigate that. Did Ambassador Volker ever relate that to you?
No, we just talked in generic terms about, quote, investigating Burisma.
Okay. But it had nothing to do with Vice President Biden.
I had never heard Vice President Biden come up until very late in the game.
When?
I don't recall the exact date, but when it all sort of came together, maybe after the transcript of the July 25th call. I don't know. I don't know the exact date when I made the connection.
Okay.
Apparently, a lot of people did not make the connection.
Okay. I want to turn to the letter from Senator Johnson. When he heard about some of these issues in the hold of the aid, he called the president. He called the president on August 31st. It's page 6 of his letter. Senator Johnson states, or he writes, I asked him, the president, whether there was some kind of arrangement where Ukraine would take some action and the hold would be lifted. Without hesitation, President Trump immediately denied such an arrangement existed. Senator Johnson quotes the president saying, no, and he prefaced it with a different word. No way. I would never do that. Who told you that? I have, Senator Johnson says, I have accurately characterized the president's reaction as adamant, vehement, and angry. Senator Johnson's telephone call with the president wasn't a public event. It was capturing a genuine moment with the president. And he had, at this point in time, on August 31st, he was adamant, vehement, and angry that there was no connections to aid. There were no preconditions.
Yeah, I had my meeting with Senator Johnson where, again, I had made the presumption that I had made to both Mr. Yermak and the email I had sent to Secretary Pompeo. And we were sort of ruminating about what was going on. And Senator Johnson, I believe, said, I'm going to call President Trump, you know, and find out. And then he obviously had that phone call. I wasn't involved in that phone call.
Okay. But you have no reason to disbelieve that wasn't the way it went down, right?
No reason to disbelieve, okay. Senator Johnson.
And now that you've had some time since your deposition and you submitted an addendum relating to the Warsaw get-together with Mr. Yermak, as you sit here today, I mean, are we missing a lot of your communications with the president?
I haven't had that many communications with the president, and in fact, a bunch of the call records that I have had access to, just the short period of time on the call indicates I never got through. In other words, I was put on hold for 1 or 2 minutes and the call never connected. So I really can't give you an accurate count of how many conversations. Plus, Mr. Castor, I've had a lot of conversations with the president about completely unrelated matters that have nothing to do with Ukraine.
So, but you don't think we're missing any material conversations that you have with the president?
I don't recall any material conversations today as I'm sitting here.
Or with Rudy Giuliani?
Yeah, my memory about the conversations with Rudy Giuliani, whether they were direct, whether they were conference calls with Ambassador Volker or Secretary Perry, is really vague without seeing the call logs.
Are there any other key fact witnesses that would help us get to the bottom of whether there was any link to the aid and the...
Maybe Brian McCormack, the chief of staff for Secretary Perry, who was involved in and out as well.
Okay. Now, the aid was ultimately lifted on September 11th, correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. And Senator Johnson, in his letter on page 6, quotes the president on August 31st, Ron, I understand your position. We're reviewing it now, and you'll probably like my final decision. So even on August 31st, and this is before any congressional investigation started, the president was signaling to Senator Johnson that he was going to lift the aid.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Okay. And most of the other witnesses we talked to, whether it's from the Department of Defense or OMB or, have told us that all along during this 55-day period, they genuinely believed the hold would be lifted. Was that your feeling, too, at the time?
I didn't know because every time I asked about the hold, I was never given a straight answer as to why it had been put in place to begin with.
Now, what do you know about the Ukrainians' knowledge of the hold?
Oh, that's very vague. I don't know if the Politico article triggered it. I don't know if they were told by Mr. Giuliani. It would be pure, guesswork on my part, speculation. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, during your deposition, you testified that you did not believe the Ukrainians believed the were aware of the hold until the Politico article.
Yeah. I think I testified that I was not clear on the exact dates of when the light went on. There were a lot of conversations going on with the Ukrainians by a lot of people, so I don't know who communicated what to them.
We have testimony from several witnesses that the president was concerned about foreign aid generally, and so he had an appetite to put holds on aid because he was trying to be a good steward of U.S. taxpayer dollars. Do you agree with that?
I'm aware that that's been his position on aid and other matters, yes.
And are you aware that he was also interested in better understanding the contributions of our European allies?
That I'm definitely aware of.
And there was some back and forth between the State Department officials trying to better understand that information for the president?
Yes, that's correct.
And how do you know that wasn't the reason for the hold?
I don't.
But yet you speculate that there was a link to this announcement.
I presumed it, yes.
Okay. I want to turn quickly to the July 10th meeting. The July 10th meeting in Ambassador Bolton's office involving Ambassador Volker, Mr. Daniluk, Mr. Yarmak, has been the subject of some controversy. Ambassador Volker yesterday testified that it wasn't until the end of the meeting. Mr. Daniluk, he said, was going through some real detailed information about some of the plans he had. But it wasn't until the end of the meeting, Ambassador Volker recollects that you mentioned something general about investigations. What do you remember from that meeting?
Well, again, I'm not going to dispute Ambassador Volker's recollection, particularly if he had notes. I know that the desire to have the 2016 election DNC server in Burisma were already being discussed by then. Again, I had no direct contact with Mr. Giuliani on July 10th, but through Ambassador Volker. And I probably mentioned that this needs to happen in order to move the process forward. That seemed to be the conventional wisdom at the time. I don't recall any abrupt ending of the meeting or people storming out or anything like that. That would have been very memorable if someone had stormed out of a meeting based on something I said.
Okay, and nobody accused you at that point in time of being involved with some sort of drug deal?
No.
Did Dr. Hill ever relate to you her concerns about you being involved in a drug deal?
Never.
Okay. So you were surprised when testimony emerged that she thought there was a drug deal going on?
I was shocked.
Okay. And in fact, after the meeting, you went out and you took a picture, right?
Yeah. Ambassador Bolton, or his assistant, indicated that he was out of time, that he had another meeting to attend, and we all walked out of the White House. Everyone was smiling. Everyone was happy, and we took a picture on the lawn on a nice sunny day.
Okay. Then did you retire to the wardroom?
I think Secretary Perry asked to use the wardroom to continue the conversation. And the real subject that was under debate, and it wasn't a angry debate, it was a debate, is should the call from President Trump to President Zelensky be made prior to the parliamentary elections in Ukraine or after the parliamentary elections? And there was good reason for both. We felt, Ambassador Perry, Ambassador Volker, and I thought it would help President Zelensky to have President Trump speak to him prior to the parliamentary elections, because it would give President Zelensky more credibility, and ultimately he would do better with his people in the parliamentary elections. Others, I believe, pushed back and said, no, it's not appropriate to do it before, it should be done after. And ultimately, it was done after.
Okay. There was no mention of Vice President Biden in the wardroom?
Not that I remember, no.
Or any specific investigation?
Just the generic investigations.
Okay. Yeah. When again did the Vice President Biden nexus come to your attention?
Very late. Again, I can't recall the exact date the light bulb went on. It could have been as late as once the transcript was out, but it was always Burisma to me, and I didn't know about the connection between Burisma and Biden.
And to the best of your knowledge, you never understood that anyone was asking Ukrainians to investigate U.S. persons, correct?
Ukrainians to investigate U.S. persons?
Right.
No.
And just to sort of be clear here, ultimately the aid was lifted on September 11th. There was never any announcement by the Ukrainians about any investigations they were going to do, correct?
Correct.
The Ukrainians never, to your knowledge, started any of these investigations, correct?
Not to my knowledge.
Consequently, these allegations that there was a quid pro quo that had to be enforced before the aid was released, and it never came to fruition, right?
I don't believe so.
Okay. I want to just step back a little bit and just verify with you that the president had some genuinely deep-rooted concerns about corruption in Ukraine, correct?
That's what he expressed to us, yes.
Okay, and you believed him, right, given his business dealings in the region?
When we had the conversation, I did.
Okay. And when you first started discussing the concerns the president had with corruption, Burisma wasn't the only company that was mentioned, right?
It was a generic, as I think I testified to Chairman Schiff, it was a generic corruption, oligarchs, just bad stuff going on in Ukraine.
But other companies came up, didn't they?
I don't know if they were mentioned specifically. It might have been Naftogaz, because we were working on another issue with Naftogaz, so that might have been one of them.
At one point in your deposition, I believe you said, yeah, NAFTA gas comes up at every conversation. Is that fair?
Probably.
Okay. You had, I guess Dr. Hill at one point attributed to you the terminology that the president has given you a large remit. You familiar with her assertion of that?
I didn't understand what she was talking about.
Okay. But you have, and we got into this a little bit in your deposition, you said that the president gave you a special assignment with regard to Ukraine, correct?
Well, when the president appointed me to the as the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Ukraine was part of my portfolio. What made my assignment larger than just being part of my portfolio were the unique circumstances where there was no current sitting ambassador in Ukraine, and there was a new president in Ukraine. And the discussions that we had, the three amigos, Perry, Volker, and I, was that Ukraine needed extraordinary, as high-level support as it could get from the United States during this period, which we cleared with both Ambassador Bolton and with Chief of Staff Mulvaney to continue working on it. So by extension, yes, if the National Security Advisor and the Chief of Staff approve your remit, it really is coming from the President.
Okay. When we asked you that at the deposition, you said I was spinning a little bit.
I was spinning about something else, I think, in the interview in Kyiv.
Okay. And you further testified, so when I said the president gave me an assignment, it wasn't really the president, it was a secretary through the president. And that's where I received my direction, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Did Ambassador Taylor ever bring any concerns to your attention about the so-called the channel he dubbed the irregular?
No, in fact, the opposite. When he came to post, I know I called him, or he called me. I think he spoke with Secretary Perry and Ambassador Volker separately. And in the course of the first few weeks, he was highly appreciative that a new ambassador coming to post like himself was getting the kind of support he was getting from all three of us, having a cabinet member, a special envoy, and a fellow ambassador all helping to raise the profile of Ukraine. He was highly appreciative and highly complimentary.
And you maintained an open line with him, correct?
Correct. I think there are a number of texts, some of which I have and some of which I don't, where he is reaching out constantly to me and to the others for advice and help.
Okay. We had, tried to count them up. There's a 215 or something text messages between you, Volker, and Ambassador Taylor, during the early August time frame. Does that make sense to you?
I think Taylor started in late June or early July was when he first took post, and I think we began communicating fairly shortly thereafter.
Okay, and he never communicated any concerns to you during this time frame that he had issues with what was going on?
What do you mean by what was going on?
This request for some sort of investigation.
Not in the early stages. As time went on, his emails began to be a little more pointed and frantic.